It's great to be here tonight. You're pathetic. You're all pathetic. Sorry, that's just how the monk here. Say hello. Say hello.
Hello. Welcome to episode 12 of Undecided Podcast. I'm Tara Mahoney, and I'm here with my co-host, Kate Reeves. Hi, Kate.
Hey.
And we're also here with, there's six of us. Six other other women. We're calling this the Vagina Dialogue. We're here with six other amazing, smart young women who are going to help us run through the party platforms for our final episode on the big issues. Mm-hmm. But before we get into that, we have got a couple housekeeping things to get out of the way.
Yeah. So first off, we want to thank CBC and CTV for having us and being so receptive to our message this week, making us wake up at the goddamn crack of dawn.
Yeah, we're low-key famous now.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
We also want to thank our listeners for sticking through the first episodes when we did not know how to drink and be coherent.
Yeah.
Although, thanks
for sticking it out.
Also, I don't think we have learned that lesson that well.
No.
But,
no.
Anyway, we're getting better.
Yeah, we're doing it.
Baby steps.
Baby steps. 500 of you almost have tuned in to the last episode, and we just want to thank each and every one of you. That's really cool, and we're totally humbled.
Yeah. Okay, so without any further ado, speaking of coherence, let's go around the table and introduce ourselves.
Yes. Okay, let's start with you, my love.
Hi, I'm Rima, and I'm actually here from Ottawa, so
Shout out to Ottawa.
Yeah, that's right.
This is Niamh.
I'm also from Ottawa, and my name's Niamh, and we are representing your vote today.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a thing
that we're doing. Talk to us about it.
Okay.
10 seconds.
10 seconds. Your vote is going to be a coming soon initiative to get everyone involved in voting with accessible information and trying to stop political exclusion when it comes to youth and people.
Yeah, we're partnering with like local businesses and stuff, holding information events, etc. So keep an eye
tuned
out for that. Yeah.
Amazing.
Cool. I'm Charlie.
I'm excited to see where today goes.
Yes. I don't really know. I'm really unsure. But.
Oh, can we say our ages? If that's cool with you guys. Rima?
We're 20.
20? And Niamh is 20?
Yeah. I am also 20. And this is my first election that I can ever vote in.
Yes.
How many of you are first time voters?
Five. Oh, six.
Damn.
Oh, wait, no, I can't count.
Yeah, you can. You can.
You can, honey.
Okay,
good.
Okay.
I'm Jenny. I'm here representing your layperson, which basically means I know next to nothing about politics and the election, but I'm here to learn, I'm here to discuss, and have a good time,
Fuck yeah.
Awesome.
Yes.
Answer.
Yes.
Damn.
Okay. My name's Kiki. I'm a journalism student, super involved in politics. Mostly American, but double in Canadian. And
I double.
Transplant from BC, so.
Ooh, shout out to Victoria.
Super stoked. Yeah. And I'm 20 also.
Damn.
You guys have me feeling so old. I am Francita. I am a creative here in Toronto, born and raised. I also dabble in a bunch of other things, like art and design. And I am 26. Oh my god. I am the grandmother of this room. And I'm okay with it.
Show us your wisdom.
Okay, amazing. So before we get to the news, just a quick thing, because I've gotten this question several times this week already. People are asking me, and especially young people, because this is really common, you like have all your mail going to your parents' house, and you just moved to Toronto, and you don't really have any ID that says like your address on it, so you don't know if you're registered, where you're registered to vote. So you don't know if you go to the polling station, like what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So, if you live in another city than you grew up in, you can go to the polling station with a piece of photo ID, government-issued ID, so your driver's license or your passport, hand that to them. And you have to also bring a piece of mail with your address and your name on it. And if you have those things, they can register you to vote on the day you go in to vote. Mm-hmm. This episode is going to come out on Monday, June 4th. So you can vote now. You can vote early. And if June 7th doesn't work for you, go to electionsontario.ca and find your polling station. For the news, we've got a couple big things.
Mm-hmm. The first one, and the most ridiculous slash embarrassing one, is that Doug Ford has not really released a platform, but he's put up basically like an itemized list of his promises over the past couple months. But none of these are really like properly costed out. The amounts that he has put in there, economists are reporting that
this would actually add up to a bigger deficit than the Liberals and the NDP.
And it's funny because he's touted this rhetoric the whole election about how we have to balance the budget and all this.
And find efficiencies. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So he's just mad hypocritical.
Yeah.
But he's not even good at it. Good because summary. He found it right away. At least he's moved. I really
hope everybody picks up on that and doesn't just, like...
That's his entire campaign, though, right? A Bubble Boy campaign where it's just like, I'm going to answer the questions where I want to answer.
If you have a question about
the things that are wrong with my campaign, then you just wait until I'm in power and you will deal with it.
Okay, that's why we're here to call out all that.
Hell yeah, dude.
Exactly.
Right. I think it really speaks to the incompetence of, like, him and his people, though. Like, it's like, you really couldn't figure this out. Like, yeah, you couldn't do the basic math. And then the other piece of news is that yesterday, Kathleen Wynne, on June 2nd, Kathleen Wynne conceded that she will not be the next Premier of Ontario. She said she thinks that it's pretty clear at this point, like, that she will not be. And so she had this, like, she started the ball going really well, you know, really humble, like, you know, this isn't about me being Premier, this isn't about my job, like, all really great stuff. And then she was like, but also vote Liberal, because we need to elect more Liberals so that we can keep the NDP or Conservative government in check. And I don't know about y'all, but this... as a progressive politician, I thought that she would have come out and been like, vote NDP so that we can save Ontario. I'm super confused about this this tactic. Ultimately I realized, like, no one's gonna listen to what she says because a lot of people hate her, and I don't agree with that, but a lot of people don't like her. So no one's gonna listen to her, but I was just confused.
Such a strange move.
Yeah. Well, her perspective was that she didn't want those who had been still supporting her to believe that she had just given up, which
very important point. Yeah, definitely.
Also, definitely kind of an argument for still putting in your policies and your ideals and whatnot and having a voice for that.
Yeah.
But if it's not going to be
beneficial,
like, if you don't have the power to actually make any sort of difference with that, like,
you need to be realistic.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You have to see the reality of the whole situation.
What was her goal in conceding now, though?
Like, basically to, like, get people to go knock doors and, like, get the vote out for, like,
her seats.
Like, it kind of looks right now like she's not going to win her own seat, which is, like,
sad.
Really hella sad. Cool. And they might also, we don't know, but, like...
It's in Toronto. It's, like, what's her riding? Davenport?
No. Don Valley West.
Don Valley.
Right. And, you know, I just think that, like... I think that she's trying to save, like, the, you know, maybe the last jobs of, like, maybe her peers, but they can all, like, some polling is showing, and who knows if it's fucking right, but some polling is showing that they could lose official party status, which, you know, three parties is actually what makes our democracy healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that'll the Liberals getting eight seats, like, more than eight seats could actually, like, you know, it could,
Maybe they'll band together with the Green Party and become a real party.
Maybe.
Dark.
Okay.
Okay.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Let's keep the ball rolling here, folks. Kate.
Okay.
Off to Kate.
So, back to our beginnings, we talked about housing in Toronto and in the GTA and in Ontario more broadly. So, different parties have had different approaches to housing, but broadly speaking, this is what they're kind of laying out. So the PCs want to eliminate rent control, and they want to eliminate the foreign buyer's tax in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Not good.
Yeah. Mm. So, and the important thing to understand about those two things is that those are two things that the Liberals actually put in.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know what rent control and foreign buyer's tax is, rent control means that landlords can only increase the rent by about 2% a year. Whereas before, they were able to increase the rent by much more than that. So, for example, your rent is $1,600, and the next day, their landlord says, I'm putting it up to $2,500. So people ended up being economically evicted from their homes,
mm-hmm.
which is horrific.
Yeah.
And so that's why rent control is important. Foreign buyer's tax is a 15% tax on foreign home ownership, which means if you are not an Ontario resident, you have to, and you buy a house in Ontario, you have to pay 15% extra. That's to drive down the cost of housing that's brought up by these really rich people that come in from outside and buy up the real estate, especially in the GTA.
Mm-hmm. So the Liberals obviously want to maintain their foreign buyer's tax as a one-time payment in the Greater Golden Horseshoe region, which is like Toronto and the GTA Plus.
Mm.
And they also want to create about 2,000 new housing units with a mix of, like, market-based units, which means like regular condo price, and affordable units, which means like apartments that we priced at, for people who are at a more low income standpoint, which is great.
Mm. And we know that a mix of the two housing units is a really great way to combat poverty and intergenerational poverty.
Yeah,
because it allows for social mobility, mixed housing.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of like the fact of creating an area that people will think is maybe undesirable.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So the NDP want to maintain the foreign buyer's tax, but change it so it's not just one-time payment, but it's every single year. So this would drastically increase the taxes on foreign buyers.
Mm-hmm.
They also want to build, this is over 10 years, but they also want to build 30,000 new supportive housing units. They want to introduce 65,000 new affordable homes over 10 years. And they want to, well, they say they want to introduce legislation which would require developers to include affordable homes in their new projects, like the Liberals. But again, this is not like a concrete, it's definitely going to happen thing, but it is a promise that they've made.
Yeah. One thing about the foreign buyer's tax at the NDP, it's not a foreign buyer's tax, but it's a housing speculation tax. It's every year. And for the first year, it's $5 for every assessed $1,000 of value in your home. And for the next year, it's $20 for every assessed $1,000 value. And if that didn't mean anything to you, basically it means if you own a $1 million home, you're going to be able to pay, you're going to have to pay $20,000 extra dollars a year for that, to own that home if you're a foreign homeowner, which has the potential to really work.
Mm-hmm.
Because the foreign buyer's tax, apparently people are so rich, they just like factor it into the
payment. Yeah. Oh, you need $20,000 extra for me to live in this, you know, three-story condo? Sure, here you go.
Yeah.
So how do you guys feel about housing? How does that impact your lives?
Yeah,
we want to know. As young voters, why UNG?
Interesting. I think as someone just, you know, trying to find somewhere that rent is going to stay reasonable, it's so important. Just because, like, I've been living at Midtown for about 6-7 years now, and we have rent control just by our landlords alone. And it has been such a lifesaver, only because now 7 years into condos going up and, you know, gentrification swiping into our area, I'm still sitting at a price point that is manageable for me, whereas people are moving into the same building with rent that's $400 more than I'm paying. And it's affecting them. It's definitely affecting them. We're seeing more business owners and business types move into the area, which obviously, again, drives the price up. And that's happening more and more often in more and more areas in Toronto. It used to just be, you know, King Street and Queen Street. It's Eglinton, it's Yonge, it's, you know, it's everywhere. It's the whole lakeshore. So it's definitely super important that this is a focus. And it's funny because I don't think the PC party really went to the PC party hasn't really spoke on it too much. They've made their, you know, their, again, their two little promises.
They were to eliminate the foreign buyer's tax and to stop rent control.
Well, because, you know, the PC party obviously is going to benefit off of that tax. So, or if, you know, if, or they wouldn't be benefiting off the tax, so they're not going to want it to be there, is, you know, pretty obvious if you know any sort of history of the PC party, but
they don't care about poor people.
They don't. They're, you know, middle class. What's that?
Yeah.
Or there's something below that?
No clue.
Charlie, there's a lot of NIMBYs in your neighborhood, right? Can you
talk
about that?
Yeah. So I live in Cabbage Town.
Shout out to Cabbage Town.
Which I actually really love my area. Like I love, it's really pretty and stuff, but there's definitely a lot of people who don't want. They want to keep the character of Cabbage Town there, which, and on one hand, I understand the idea of, like, wanting to keep these beautiful buildings that maybe have historical significance, but on the other hand, it's, people need to live somewhere. And Cabbage Town actually, in the past sort of 30 years, has gone through a lot of gentrification, and, you know, now there's Starbucks, you know, like that's the store when an area starts to get gentrified that I feel like first pops up.
I moved out of your area into my area when that Starbucks popped up. Exactly. It's a sign.
But so there's definitely a lot of, and it just seems so unfounded. As for an example, like, this wasn't Cabbage Town, this was the Annex. This is near where, like, Margaret Atwood lived. I don't know if you guys remember this, but, like, she penned this letter against a it was like a 12-story or 14-story apartment building in her area because it would ruin the character of the area. And it's like, you're not destroying the character of an area by introducing.
Yeah, and these are the same people. Yeah. These are literally the exact same people. Margaret Atwood, and like, Margaret Atwood's great. Like, she's a great writer, but these are the same people who are like, bring more Syrian refugees into our country. And then it's like, where are you going to put them? Seriously.
I feel so, I'm like from Ottawa, so it's a bit of a different vibe with the whole housing thing. As well, I also live with my parents. Shout out to Zita and Craig. I like, it's a huge thing. I live in the Glebe and people are like all about this whole like staying the vibe, keeping it real. And people are huge against like development and like apartment buildings and new residencies because they're like, oh, we'll like change how the neighborhood is. I'm like, yeah, but this neighborhood has been what it is for like 80 years. We can move on, like the rest of the world has. And it just is like, it's sad for me because it just shows me that like these people who you think are like in this like super vibey neighborhood, like want to like change the world, they actually don't.
No.
And they're like so set in their ways and they're not ready to let more people in, which is
also everyone in that neighborhood is white.
I think it's heartbreaking to feel the fact that someone is just so concerned about having other cultures and life and development in their own area. I'm like, it's not yours. Like, this is a developing world. We're in Canada. Share the space. Learn from each other. Like, the fact that you're so self-absorbed in the way that your garden party looks, like, and you're gonna have a
That's like, a pew-pew-pew-pew.
For sure. It's like the ultimate example of liberal hypocrisy, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it's like, oh, let's invite all these people to live with us. Like, I'm so about Syrian refugees, anyone, poor people, but, like, not in my neighborhood.
Not really with us.
Well, though, okay, so we've seen that the NDP are gonna offer a bit more relief for that by introducing the foreign buyers tax annually, which could be great and could help to kind of stem.
It's actually called the housing speculation tax.
Housing speculation tax. Okay, cool.
Good.
Just like cool down the housing market a bit. So, great.
Yeah.
We'll see how that shakes down.
Yeah.
With time.
Well,
with
I mean, if they get elected, who knows?
Yeah. So, another happy topic. Climate change.
Oh, yeah.
Let's move right along. So, okay. So Doug Ford wants to eliminate the cap and trade system in Ontario, which is like our carbon pricing system. Basically, it's that companies can they're allowed to emit a certain amount of pollution annually, and if they go over that, they have to pay extra, and they can trade it around and do like business people shit. I don't know.
Yeah.
But basically, he wants to get rid of it, which means that
if you're really rich, you can like you can buy.
Basically, companies have free reign to pollute as much as they want without any kind of pricing system.
Mm-hmm. But this brings in government revenue.
Yes.
Cap and trade brings in government revenue, which a lot of which goes to green projects, like or transit, like public transit.
So, so he wants to get rid of it, but he says he does believe in man-made climate change, and that is like the bar that we're at right now. Like. So the Liberals were the ones who brought in this cap and trade carbon pricing system. Jesus, in September 2017, and since 2017, they've raised $2.4 billion in proceeds, which is fucking great.
And it was praised internationally too.
Yeah. So the NDP want to stick with the Liberal plan. They're all down. Climate change is real.
Yeah.
We might all die.
Quick thoughts on climate change.
It honestly is like such a big deal, and
let's get the West Coasters
opinion. And like, I was a Green Party stan for a long time because that's like Victoria, but I work in a research center which is like looking for renewable energy solutions to like all the demand on the grid in like the downtown core, which is a lot. And climate change like isn't something that we have time to act on, and I think that's the scariest part of a lot of conservative, like the Republicans in the States or like the PCs here. Like, they think that we just have time to like dick around for another 10 years and be like, you know, like it's not happening. And like, environmental racism is like totally a thing, and it's gonna hit minorities first. And
or it already is. It already
is. It is. Oh, totally. Yeah. But like, you know, when shit really starts to hit the fan a couple years down the road, it's gonna hit minorities first and poor people. And I think for a lot of PC voters, they're just like, we can buy our way out. Like, you know, we can buy the house at the top of the hill.
We'll just move tomorrow.
Yeah. And like, the tsunami's not gonna hit me.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, I mean, it's just something that we have no time to act on, and so Doug Ford's proposals are really frightening.
Yeah. Jenny, what do you think?
Kiki, do you know if we have a carbon tax in BC?
We do.
Okay. Last time I talked to someone about it, it wasn't as high as it is here.
No,
BC and Ontario are doing the most, I think, for climate.
Are we sure that BC, it's a carbon tax or it's cap and trade?
BC is carbon tax?
Yeah.
Carbon tax.
So cap and trade is a little different. It doesn't bring in as much government revenue. A carbon tax is directly, it goes directly back to the government.
Right.
Cap and trade, like, it leaves more to the market.
Okay. Yeah.
But Jenny's a science student, so you know what's up with the environment.
Climate change is bad.
It's real.
A huge step backwards if we eliminate this cap and trade system. I was learning in my classes that politicians think in 5 to 10 year chunks, obviously, because that's how long they'll likely be in office, and that's just not working.
Yeah,
you can't be thinking only 10 years in the future.
Yeah, the problem with climate change is it's really like politically, it's a difficult thing politically to be like, in 20 years or in like 50 years because people are like, but I have problems now. So like it's a really hard sell, I don't think, to people our age, but to people like older than us.
For sure.
I heard this funny podcast where they were like, we should, like, people who are like 65 and older, we should like the government should like fully take care of them, but none of them should get to vote. And because they're not, it's not their future. I don't actually believe in that, but I thought it was funny.
It was like in one of his stand-up specials,
John Mulaney
he was like, I don't think old people should vote because you're not going to order for the table when you're leaving the restaurant.
Oh, yeah!
Oh, my God.
Fair.
Yeah. I love that. Wow. Like, Grandma, I love you.
Snap so that.
Don't take a seat. My
future. Yeah. Okay, cool. So we all agree climate change is real. And
oh, my God.
Can I just say, though, that, like, as much as we hate Doug Ford's stand on it, he actually does believe it's a thing.
Yeah.
Like, so that's sadly progressive in some sense.
It's so weird, though, because it's only because of the United States and their and the Koch brothers' interest in the Republican Party that climate change has been disputed in conservative circles, because it's not like a conservative ideal to think climate change isn't real. It's literally just the Koch brother funded like advertising that's like, oh yeah, climate change isn't real, or Koch brother funded scientists. So it's actually not a conservative, it's actually not fundamentally conservative to believe that climate change isn't real. And if you actually look at the word conserve,
Okay. Doug Ford has actually come out with some interesting stuff on healthcare. He said that no nurses would lose their jobs under his government, which is A+, great.
Hard promise to keep,
but, you know, at least he's saying it. He's committed to creating 15,000 new hospital beds within 5 years and 30,000 over the next 10 years to end hallway medicine, which his mother was personally affected by. That's pretty compelling. And he's committed $1.9 billion over 10 years for mental health spending.
So the Liberals have promised free pharmacare and dental care for people under the age of 25 and over the age of 65. For people that are not covered also in between those ages, that don't have coverage through their work, they'll also cover a certain amount of your dental and pharmacare. So the government will, under the Liberals. They will increase spending by $5 billion over 3 years for healthcare. I don't know 5 divided by 3, guys. That's a lot. That's more.
Number.
That's way. That's well. It could be a lot.
Yeah.
That could be around equal to what Doug Ford is promising. Actually.
No, it's definitely a lot more. $5 billion over 3 years. I don't know the math either, but he's promising $1.9 billion
over 10 years. Oh, sorry.
So okay. They're promising a lot more. They're also promising $822 million in hospital funding as soon as they get elected, which would help also combat hallway medicine. And they're also promising $17.1 billion for mental health care over 4 years.
Which is a lot.
Have they at all explained where they're going to get that money from?
I was just wondering that, yeah.
Well, we know they're going to get that from taxes.
Yeah,
from
and they're going to run a deficit.
Like, the people who are making, like, around over $220,000 a year would get their taxes bumped up even more than they already are. Which, like, I'm down with that.
And the NDP are going to immediately increase hospital funding by 5.3%, $30 million, and introduce 2,000 new hospital beds, which, I don't know, like, could be a lot, but, like,
That's across the whole province. Ontario is fucking big.
It's massive.
The thing about introducing new hospital beds, though, is, like, if you've got that many more hospital beds, you need more staff to deal with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're also going to
She's right. That part. She's correct. It's true.
Like, do they have a plan to deal with that, though? That's my question.
They're, I think that's where that $30 million might go, is to bring in those more healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But they haven't specified that directly, so it's kind of speculative right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
They also want to create 35 new community health centers, and these would specifically address the needs of marginalized communities, including LGBTQ communities, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only by 2025, so long-term plan.
Yeah. This one's huge.
This one is amazing. They're also going to fully cover the cost of transition drugs for trans individuals.
That is definitely going to raise a hand on that.
Yeah.
I have a friend who's doing that right now, and it's a huge financial situation. Yeah. Like, she's choosing between, like,
so long.
Like, they're choosing between, like, schooling, which school they go to, or if they're going to be transitioning this year. And it's like, it's a huge thing.
Yeah, that's
just
for
perspective.
Have to make.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then they're also going to introduce universal pharmacare and dental care. So similar to liberals, but it'll be for everyone.
Unfortunately, the liberal plan covers, like, over 1,000 drugs, and the NDP plan covers 120 drugs. So it says universal, but, like, I don't know. I have no idea what those drugs are.
Yeah.
So
to an extent, it's really not.
Asterisk.
Many
asterisks.
It's usually not anything that's, like, deemed as a self-help issue.
Yeah.
Or if
or,
it's, like...
Or mental health.
Self-help or mental health or anything that's based around body size and weight is usually just deemed not actually necessary.
Like, or aesthetic.
Or, it's aesthetically, you know, necessary. Mm-hmm. So it's usually probably going to be, you know, the typical... antibiotics, things for, you know, that prevent sort of community sickness, but it won't be, like, very helpful in terms of people who are seeking mental health and sort of manic type drugs.
Right.
It's still going to be
limited. Is there a list of what they're offering?
There is a list
there
of that.
List,
I recently found this out very recently, so I have for a long time been on a drug called fluoxetine, which is an antidepressant, and so that's covered. It's all great. But because of that, there's a certain type of birth control that I have to be on so that it doesn't interact with that. And since that kind is a little bit unusual,
it's not
covered.
Wait, so you've gone into the pharmacy since the liberals have come in?
She pays for her birth control.
Very recently, actually, 2 weeks ago, I accidentally went in too early, and they were like, and I just gotten confused. I thought I didn't have an extra pack at home, but I fully did. So I went in too early by accident, and they were like, well, you're too early, we can't cover you, so if you want this now, you have to pay $75.
Whoa.
And even on a regular basis, that particular birth control, because it's not one of the super common ones, is not covered.
Is it officially covered?
It's no, the only reason it's covered
is
because...
Your insurance, right?
Yeah,
because
my mom's
so the
insurance.
Government doesn't cover it.
No.
Not
at all.
Is it the brand?
It's the brand because
it's not the brand. It's not the brand, though. It's the...
It's the particular
drug. The makeup. Like, you know how, like, a less... It has, like, an Alisenia. Like, there's,
right?
Like, the same,
like,
drugs.
The balance
but,
of what that birth control is,
makeup
of like, makeup. Affects the fluoxetine, which is the antidepressant that she's on, so she can't have both.
Yeah, so I'm on, like, a more chill birth control, but... It's
just
not
covered.
Yeah, it's not covered.
It's so interesting. So I grew up in New Jersey, where, like, in the U.S., where healthcare is, like, not a thing.
At all,
yeah. Right. Well, like, it's a thing, but, like, the government, I don't know. So
for rich people.
Yeah, exactly. So when I was on our insurance, like, I paid $50 a month. Everyone I knew paid at least $50 for a month for birth control. But also, like, healthcare is important as well, but it's also health is something that's so influenced by every other aspect of life.
Of where you live, of
where
whatever.
Your job, like how much you work, how secure your community is as well.
Exactly.
So I think you need a strong healthcare plan, but then that's pointless if the rest of your, like, this is kind of how I feel about the PCs. I think it's good that they're, like, whatever, not going to fire any nurses and they're going to stop hallway medicine. But if the rest of your political idea is to not
support
the
people.
Most vulnerable communities.
Exactly. Then that isn't... What's the point? Like, you're not really changing what's making these people sick.
Yeah. Definitely.
Wow. Okay.
I like that. Actually, that's a great jumping off point for education, because this is where, you know, I mean, at least primary education, that's where, like, our humans are formed.
Mm-hmm.
So, Kate.
Yeah, so the PCs, they want to reshape, quote-unquote, the 2015 sex ed reforms with greater parental input. So this would mean, basically this would mean rolling back the kind of content about diverse sexual orientation and like accepting other people and not being consent. A bigot, consent, all this kind of stuff that was brought in 2015 and that made a huge difference in the sex ed, or not even sex ed, the health curriculum.
It is a health curriculum because they don't introduce sex until like later grades, like 6th or 7th grade.
Yeah.
For, and people keep calling it the sex ed curriculum, but it's in grade three, the things people have problems with is that in grade three, they introduce different types of families. So your friend could have a daddy and a mommy, but he could also have two mommies. He could also have two daddies or other arrangements of families, and all of that is cool. That is what they're trying to teach these kids. And that's
Which makes sense.
It's only like in later grades when they teach them about sex, but they're not quote teaching anal sex in classrooms, according to Tonya Greenwich Allen. No one's teaching anyone anal sex.
No, definitely not. The other creepy thing that the PCs have said they would do is that they would tie university funding to their free speech rules.
Oh my god.
Huge SOS.
Yikes. This is something that Ford has said, but it's not necessarily like a platform point.
Yeah.
So we don't know how legit this is, but it is something that he has stated.
It's very big brothery. I don't like it.
It's very, like, especially in the wake of that, I'm sure you guys have all heard about Jordan Peterson, since most of us live in Toronto. Especially in the wake of all of that fucking bullshit, this is not something that I am happy to hear about.
No, it's... Oh, shout out to the plane.
Come on, transportation.
It's stuck for it. Okay, so the Liberals have already given 225,000 students free post-secondary tuition in 2018. That's huge. Mm-hmm. We can't criticize that. One point. They've also pledged $16 billion in capital grants over 10 years to fund schools. General schools?
Yeah, just like middle schools, elementary schools, high schools.
They've also promised $250 million in new funding over 3 years to eliminate wait lists for special education, which is big. More and more people are like understanding this like area of Neve can speak to this more and more we're like starting to understand like learning disabilities, and like turns out like a lot of fucking people have them,
so weird, right?
And there's these big wait lists to get you know like the help that people need, so like $250 million I'm sure would be well received. They've also committed to hire 450 new guidance counselors for grade 7 and 8 students. They've dedicated $170 million over 3 years in the Ontario Apprenticeship Strategy, which is, like, helps, this is, like, supposed to combat, like, the idea that, like, young people, like, can't get jobs because they don't have experience, so apprenticeships, like, help you while you're in school, like, do a job, and also get school at the same time.
The NDPs are going to cap kindergarten class sizes at 26 students, which is great. They've also pledged $16 billion to repair existing schools. They have pledged to ensure that schools teach inclusive history, is supposed to combat the whitewashing that happens in a lot of Canadian history classes.
I did not get that. Inclusive history.
They've also promised to end the EQAO in Ontario, which, fuck yeah, that was the most stressful experience.
The what?
Yeah.
EQAO.
Oh, what is that?
It's evil questions attacking Ontario.
Is another pew 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 pew.
Yeah. It's standardized testing that you have to take in grades 3, 6, 9. It's stressful as hell.
It's like to assess like where
it's literally a test of the schools, not the students. It also helps subjecting the students to
testing. It also helps different schools get more funding in like better like nicer areas.
Not fair. Yeah. If there's kids going to school, they deserve best they can get.
On like a quick 30-second note, like I didn't do EQAO because I'm very LD, so they're like, we're not gonna
learn disabled.
Learning disabled. You're not gonna have to do EQAO because, like, basically, when I do EQAO, their percent goes down and they get less funding. XYZ.
Dark.
Yeah.
Dark.
Wow.
Really good. That took a turn.
Fuck yeah.
That's
not right.
No, it is.
I think, like, this is where we're gonna get into the big part of the NDP education stuff.
So they're pledging to turn post-secondary OSAP loans into non-repayable grants. Which means if you qualify for OSAP, you're getting that money for free.
And I don't have the exact numbers on this, but I'm 99.9% sure that that will cover more people than the Liberals did this year.
It definitely will, because even if your household is making $100,000 a year, you can still qualify for some OSAP money.
Yeah.
So if you have three siblings and you're all trying to get to university, that adds up really fucking quick, and you might need that.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, if you're all paying 30 grand a year, so you're, like, going to a different city, that's 90 grand already.
Yeah. Also, the other day, even somebody who just went to school in their own city, I was talking to somebody who at this point is, like, married, has a child, and is still repaying student loans.
On that, though, so the NDP have also promised to repay, this affects you.
I'm here.
The current... interest on current student loans that you have paid. They didn't say in how many years prior, but like if you've already been paying interest on student loans, they'll send you a check because they'll be like, dude, that wasn't fair that we made you do that, because the government shouldn't be profiting off your like vulnerability, basically.
It benefits the government. It benefits the country that people are getting education, so why are they punishing people for that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Public transit.
Yeah, it's happening. Okay. We're nearing the end here, folks. So just hold on a little bit longer. So the PCs are endorsing. Shout out to Drake. Shout out to all of the CBC radio shows that were like, they drink cheap wine and listen to and talk about Drake, and I was like I went back through all the episodes, so I was like, we've literally mentioned Drake once.
How baby boomers describe millennials.
I love Drake. We need a Drake anecdote every episode.
But honestly, Matt Galloway, if you're listening to this, like, I low-key love you, and like, thank you for having us on your program. It was really, really good.
It's getting gushy. Let's get back to public transit.
Yeah. Kate, please take the lead.
Kara is nose deep in a sangria right now. Okay, so the PCs. They want to build all-day GO transit service to the Niagara region. Who is going to Niagara every day? I don't know, but I'm sure there are people who are
Ottawa.
They're also pledging $5 billion for Toronto subways, in addition to the billions already committed by the Liberals. And they stated that the PCs would, quote-unquote, upload responsibility to the province for Toronto Transit Commission subway infrastructure. Don't really know what that means. They support phase two of the light rail in Ottawa.
What
the fuck is up with the light rail?
This
has been trying to be built for 30 years. Yeah. Like, literally.
Is literally what the crosstown LRT is going to be in 2030. When it's supposed to be dropping in 2020.
Yeah.
We're literally going to be having crosstown buses that are breaking down still.
It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even put my finger on what they're off. Exactly. Yeah, what's going wrong, but it's just not good.
No.
It's not right. Yeah. All right. Oh. So, in the past, interestingly, Ford says that he's for transit, and he's talked about these measures that we just talked about, but he also, when he was a city councillor, voted to reduce the TTC's funding by 10%, which led to much higher wait times and much worse user experiences. So, what does that really mean? The Liberals, on the other hand, have pledged $9 billion for Toronto subways. That includes the Downtown Relief Line, the Yonge North Subway Extension, and the Waterfront Light Rail. They also stated that the fares within the city will match that of the TTC, so that'll be $3 for Presto users. They've committed $79 billion for public transit across the province over 10 years. And they're helping out grandmas and grandpas by giving seniors a 15% tax credit on public transit expenses, which my Nana, who doesn't know how podcasts work, so why am I doing this?
Imagine Nana.
Poor Nana, you'll still get
she'll benefit from that.
Yeah. And the NDP, they're pledging to extend GO transit service to Niagara, but not 2-day, not all way, which I don't know. I don't know why this is like
why
a thing.
Because
Niagara is really far from here, but I think that there are people who are commuting from Niagara to get into
Toronto.
Really?
I know there's a lot of people from Hamilton commuting, and that's pretty far.
People from London come to Toronto.
Yeah. Okay.
Wow.
That speaks to our need for affordable housing in Toronto.
Hello. They've committed to introducing two-way all-day service between Kitchener-Waterloo in Toronto, which is big.
A lot of people commute
from there. Uh-huh. They've dedicated $800 million annually for transit, with $330 million for the Toronto region. Committed to restoring service on the Ontario Northlander to bring service to northern communities. This used to be a train that brought you all the way up to Cochrane, and now it doesn't go there, so you have to, it's very complicated to get up there.
Basically, this makes northern communities, it gives them a lot more options in terms of getting to the kind of healthcare that they need, the resources they need, so this is the only party that actually addresses the northern communities' transit issues.
That's
which is really important.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's
really
so
important.
Easy to ignore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because,
yeah.
Oh, for sure.
And I think,
it's
for
so
one,
easy for
a lot
us to
of,
be like, oh my god, Toronto's, like, or
the center of the universe, and people always make fun, but, like, for one, they're indigenous population in northern Ontario is a lot larger than it is proportionally, and it's so easy for parties to ignore that.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, I don't know, no one talks about it.
Yeah.
Everyone focuses all their stuff in Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think
so
everything
easy.
South of St. Clair, like, just does it. Like, that's Toronto, nothing north of St. Clair, really.
Yeah,
that's true.
It's true, and people, we make fun of people saying Toronto's the center of the universe because we all live in Toronto, but, like, really, Torontonians, they're liberal hypocrisy again. Mm. They say they're liberals, they say they're leftists, and then they ignore these communities that actually really need access and help.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. As somebody from Ottawa, I guess, like, Ottawa
very northern, very rural.
So obviously we're not from Toronto, but there definitely are, like, maybe there are a lot of issues that and a lot of points that seem to be centered towards here, and then we're just lucky that we happen to be, like, the government town, so we're second kind of in that line.
Mm-hmm, for sure, it's, like, second to.
But there's a lot more.
Like, if I'm in Ottawa, and I'm where, Parliament of Canada is, and I am second to Toronto, what about all of the other places in Canada?
Yeah, what does that say to everything that isn't
it's just
the capital?
Like,
it's just, like, there's
it's a
so
whole
many more people. Maybe they're super concentrated in Ottawa and Toronto, but, like, that probably means that the people who aren't in these big cities are dealing with more issues because they don't have
actually,
as much access.
Exactly. And if you're not in these big cities, you're probably paying triple for transportation. Like, that's the thing.
Well, that's the payout, right? You pay
exactly.
one third for your house, and then you pay triple for transportation
exactly.
to get into.
Exactly. Like, it's
to
like,
pay
and
then
you
house.
Need the transportation to get any sort of, like,
it's a vicious
healthcare,
cycle.
Amenities,
yeah. mm-hmm.
your job,
okay.
whatever.
So, great segue to our last kind of topic, which is, like, broadly equity. And I think, like, this episode, I think, was, like, one of the most illuminating for Kate and I on a research perspective, because what we, like, basically discovered, or we came to understand, was that to address, like, poverty and homelessness in this province and elsewhere, you need to have a holistic approach. You can't just, like, put a Band-Aid on it with putting more shelters up. You need to start from birth.
Yeah.
And if you're a child, or from very young age, so if you're, for example, you're a child that was put through the foster care system, we heard Jocelyn Helland from Eva's Place, which is a shelter for homeless youth, explain that, like, we advocate basically for, like, a foster care system that, like, okay, yeah, you've been through foster care, but, like, why doesn't the government just, like, take care of you for the rest of your life? Like, because basically, like, the way we've seen, like, intergenerational poverty and, like, the, like, way that, like, kids that have been through the system, like, go after that, like, after 18, you're on your own. And
it's a hard, it's
and
a really hard system,
like,
to be
okay,
in.
I'm 24, and I'm still getting help from my parents, like,
yeah,
and
exactly.
I wouldn't be able to survive without that,
yeah.
like,
no.
I really wouldn't be able to.
It's like, oh my god, I mean, I'm being someone who sees foster kids with their foster parents, it is, like, something we can only, like, see. You can't really imagine what it's really like and the true reality of a situation like that.
Yep.
And
it's just heartbreaking to think that, like, they're, like, if you're in the, you're going in and out of the foster care program for your entire life, and you turn 18, bye, see you later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, where do you think that person is going? Yeah, like, honest to God, like, where do you see when you're giving that person, like, oh, you're 18 now, you're not in the foster care program? Where do you think you're sending them?
Yeah.
If they've been in and out their whole lives, how can you possibly think that they're like, oh, now they're totally going to university and totally getting a job and totally buying a house?
I'm sure some of them do.
I'm sure some of them. I lost a cousin in foster care system when I was 6, and we reconnected when we were 20. And she was from Ottawa. She went to McMaster's. And that's the funny part, is she was lucky enough to have found a family at the age of 17, right when she was about to turn 18, who was willing to take her in. But that doesn't happen for so many people.
It's just not an anomaly.
She was able to have this family who took care of her and sent her through school, though she was still had to ask for OSAP, and now she's drowning in that OSAP debt because she turned 18 and the government was like, okay, that's great, cool, you still owe us
$30,000. Yeah, which is insane. Fair when you look at the rest of us who have still have so much support from our families. Whether it's like so much privilege, co-signing your lease and buying your first groceries.
Yeah, that's an important part to say, that it is not always money, right? It's not always nepotism. It's not always like privilege. It can be things like that where you just need the support of a parent to sort of
literally just having somebody, somebody to bring you ice cream because you have strep throat.
Or like, how do I do this, like, how do I file my taxes?
No, exactly. If at a base level we are like, you know, with all of the parental support in the world, we are experiencing like in like depression and anxiety and like things we need a lot of support like
on.
Think of what people who have been in and out of a foster care system for, you know, like a decade, two decades. Yeah. Like,
where would they find these resources?
And I'm sure that, I'm sure you have your outliers who are like these, you know, they're remarkable people and they get to university or they they become like the, you know, they become the Elon Musk or whatever. Like, we started from the bottom, now we're here, whatever. Right. I don't think that's the Elon Musk story.
But for most people, that support needs to come from the government.
Yeah.
And so this is what the parties are
Can't get those back on track.
So the PCs are saying they're going to cut funding overall, which will probably mean social services.
Right.
They're also going to cap the minimum wage at $14 an hour instead of bringing it up to 15, which will have a significant impact on minimum wage earners over their years. Mm-hmm. They're also going to cover $6,750 in childcare costs per child under the age of 15, but childcare in Toronto costs about $3,000 a month. So and that does not go
for. And it's only asterisk up to.
Yeah.
Up to six.
Yeah. So the Liberals, on the other hand, they were the ones who introduced the minimum wage in January 2018, and they're going to bump that up to $15 an hour in 2019. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They've pledged more community-based mental health services. They've committed to adding more than 525 more supportive housing units for people who have complex mental health and addiction needs. And they, like we said earlier, have pledged $17.1 billion over 10 years for mental health spending.
Mm-hmm.
They also offer free childcare for children over the age of 2.
Mm-hmm.
And they also implemented full-day kindergarten, which has a huge impact on childcare
costs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, so like, from a, like, an equity or, like a especially, like, for the wage gap and, like, women, like,
This is feminist policy.
This and it is will have feminist a big policy. Impact. Yeah.
The NDP are following in those kind of footsteps. Yep. They're going to maintain the minimum wage plan. They're going to invest in more supportive housing units over the next 10 years, building at least 3,000 every year. They've pledged to hire 2,200 new mental health care workers, and they've pledged free childcare for households earning under $40,000 annually, and then that would increase on an average of $12 a day for households who earn over $40,000 annually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And here's why, like, I think that people are having a hard time, like, deciding, is because on the childcare thing, if that is a big issue for you, mm-hmm. and there are so many other issues throughout the election, this election campaign we've seen that are like this, the platforms are so similar, or, like, they're hard to differentiate. So, like, would you rather, or, like, you know, people, okay, why do you have to choose between helping, like, the most vulnerable communities and then, like, paying $12 a day for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think this calls for a larger swing to the left. but anyway.
So that kind of addresses our income inequality.
Yeah.
And what the parties are doing to address that by looking at things holistically, and that includes childcare, education, healthcare, etc. Another issue we wanted to cover under equity was queer issues. We talked about this last week.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to mention a couple things really quickly.
Yeah.
The PCs, like we said, are going to roll back.
They all have a chance to respond.
Yeah, they're going to roll back. Inclusive sex ed, big no-no. They also have historic connections with significant anti-queer or anti-diversity kind of advocates on the far right. The liberals plan to...
Some of their
to,
candidates even.
Yeah, the liberals also plan to maintain their 2015 sex ed curriculum. There's a lot of symbolism of Kathleen Wynne being a queer woman as the party leader and as the premier of our province. True, that's really important. They've also pledged a lot of mental health funding, and they're going to pilot Canada's first dedicated queer community legal clinic, which is great. NDP, like we said, maintain the 2015 sex ed curriculum, fully cover the cost of transition medicine for trans individuals, and improve access to primary and secondary procedures for trans individuals. So we're seeing a lot
awesome.
From them.
And you're going to get a chance to respond now in the final question of our podcast, this season at least. Guys, who do you think you're going to be voting for and why?
Mm-hmm. Why don't we start
with Francita?
Yeah.
I actually have an answer.
Guide us!
Why is
Seth wrong? It's funny though, because like you guys are 20, most of you are 20, and like this is the first year you're voting. It took me up until last year to even get to this point. So this year I'll probably be voting. I'm a little biased because I do have a couple friends. Jill Andrews for St. Paul's.
Oh my god, shout out!
What?
Yes!
A couple friends running for NDP, so I'm a little bit biased, so I probably will be voting NDP this year. Mm-hmm. And I mean, not to say that I haven't voted NDP in the past years, but I just feel like it's so much more realistic this year. Yeah. Like, it's so strange to, like, look at the pollings and be like, NDP isn't potentially could take it.
Yeah.
Like, it's,
yeah.
It's, yeah. Like, it's like Narnia. Yeah. It's like, what? Like, yeah, it's very surreal. But
and your vote could make the difference.
It could. It definitely could. It definitely could.
Keeks.
Honestly, I've, like, bled orange from the get-go, because my mom, was a huge NDP fan back in BC. I voted NDP in the federal election a couple years ago, but, their whole platform is so sexy to me, like, honestly, they're killing it to me on most things. I mean, a little ambitious in some areas, but, like, all parties have to be, you know? Shoot for the stars, so, but yeah, NDP.
Yes, your local layperson votes NDP. My parents are huge NDP supporters back home, and that's what they voted. And out here, I feel like the climate's the same, and I really support what we've talked about today.
Mm-hmm.
Your platform.
I am actually declining my ballot, which is a... first of all, I wouldn't do it if I lived in a riding that I thought would not go either Liberal or NDP. But I live in Toronto Centre. There's the chances of it going to Conservative are very, very slim. I am declining my ballot because I am, yeah. Because, first of all, not that many people decline their ballot. So to decline your ballot doesn't mean I spoil my ballot, and it doesn't mean that I'm not voting. It's a formal, I don't want to say vote because it's the rejection of a vote, but it's formal... me formally saying I'm not going to vote or I don't believe in any of the candidates.
Making a statement.
The last provincial election, around 29,000 Ontario people voted or declined their ballot. And there's a few reasons for me doing this. The first of which is that I don't agree with the election system. I want a proportional representation system. Sorry. Had a little sangria.
That's what this podcast is all about.
And the other reason is I think my vote will mean more as a, from me declining my ballot versus me, my other choice would be to vote NDP. And I think me declining my ballot as a young person makes a larger statement. I think a lot of what all the political parties say, whether it's NDP, Liberal, PCs, is a lot of talk and not a lot of actual doing, or it's very difficult to get things done. And I find it really, really frustrating. I find politics really, really frustrating. But I don't want to not have a vote, and I don't want to not have a say.
Wow.
And I want to say to all young people who are like, my vote doesn't count or whatever, instead of just not going to the polls or instead of just not voting, if you decline your ballot and you say, none of these people represent me, none of these people really truly say what I want to say, you're going to have more of a say than politicians thinking you just don't care. Because I don't think most people don't care.
I'm interested to know if all 26,000 of those people voted, what a difference it would, how much it would sway an election one way or the other.
Yeah, that's true. That's across all of Ontario, though. It's not just one riding. Like, again, if I lived in a riding where I thought it was going to be particular contention, like, I don't want Doug Ford to win. Very clearly, I would, but I live in Toronto Centre.
Yeah. It's really interesting for us in our riding, personally. Yeah. Political debate. Went to the debates, because... What else do you do with your free time? And it's very, very different and interesting for our riding. We have a very, very young person for Green Party. We have...
Oh, is she 20?
Yeah, she's like 20. Oh. And then there is Yasser Naqvi, who has been a Liberal member for a very long time and has done a lot of things.
A minister.
And he's done a lot of things. And then there's Joel Harden, who is the NDP representative. Mm-hmm. And he, for me, we went to a lot of ridings, and there was a lot of controversy revolving him, because he tends to play off the very, like, topical conversations. Right. So, like, he'd be asked questions, and he'd be, like, relate them to more topical things. So it'd be from, like, Catholic schools and public schools, like, joining together, and he'd be, like, straight to abortion, okay? So, and then the guy would be, like, sir, this is very not the question I've just asked you. So for me, like, originally, I was like, this couldn't be a possibility for me. It came across as, like, acting for the people. Like, he was, like, trying to get people riled up and, like...
Kind of a populist, left populist. No,
it was very frustrating, but, like, Yasser has done amazing things for me as a childcare worker. Obviously, I have difficulties with Joel because of his, like, the way he chooses to talk about things, mm-hmm. but I can't, being as informed as I am on politics, I can't say that I'm going to have to vote for Yasser because I like him and he's done cool things, but I have to think of Ontario as a whole. And, right. you know, for me, like, people in my neighborhood are very self-centered and very orientated on the riding itself, but I see a broader perspective of Ontario, and I can't see myself... Yes, Yasser may benefit me more than Joel will, but I'm already extraordinarily benefited from my parents, my work, and where I live. So why do I need to be that? Why can't I vote NDP and tell people this is the reality, you know? Like, yes, Joel might not be best for me, and he might not be best for my riding, but what about Ontario? And that's what this election is for me.
Wow. That's interesting.
That's a really good...
Yeah, Rima, what do you think?
So I 100% agree with Neve on that. We went to the debate together, and... The whole time, I'm sitting there going, like, but this guy, when Joel Harden was talking, he's just saying things to get the people going and stuff like that.
He's good at it.
He's very good public speaker, but he did not say once how this policy was going to be implemented, where they were going to get the money for it, how they were going to go about fixing such and such issue, which really bothered me, because meanwhile the other candidates, like the Green Party girl, even though she's my age, and she was doing a perfectly good job of explaining how they would implement, like, go about implementing their thing, and I understand that not everybody is going to be analyzing everything from such a logical perspective.
They should.
Yeah. Exactly. That's
yes, for sure. But politics is emotional.
It's definitely emotional. You're aware that the Liberals might not win, in which case we would definitely want NDP over PC. Because we're both in a position where we are extremely benefited by family, that's... relatives, just social conventions.
For sure. Right.
Okay. So that's interesting. So this entire podcast has been about Kate. you may not think about it that way, because I tend to be an asshole and talk a lot, but Kate was really, like, the reason that we called it Undecided in the first place. Kate is a first-time voter, and through this, both of us have gone on a journey of discovery and knowledge, the premise came to be was because of Kate. Mm-hmm. So, Kate, I want to know, what do you think?
Are you decided?
I'm decided. I have been thinking about it for
a long
time.
I think I know what it is.
She knows what it is. I'm nervous. I am going to be voting in Ottawa, like the same neighborhood as Rima and Neve and Ottawa Center. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be also voting NDP based on the research that I've done and my personal, like, fundamental beliefs about equity and different stuff. I feel like that they address it best. I haven't seen the debates, but I really respect and like Joel Harden, so I'm totally comfortable voting for him. And, yeah, I'm excited to cast my ballot. Mm-hmm. What about you, Tara?
Some people out there may know this about me, but I'm a recovering partisan, and I haven't been in partisan politics for 2 years, so I feel like I can now say that I don't participate in that anymore. But I used to be pretty liberal, and I have to say that my partisan ways really influenced the way I started this journey out. But I also have to say that my co-host and doing a hefty amount of research has swayed me. My parents will probably be so disappointed.
It's all good. Rickard and Kathy, it's all good.
Yo, shout out to Rickard and Kathy. I think I'll be voting NDP this election because I ultimately don't want to secure the election of Doug Ford. I'm very worried about the province swaying the same way the U.S. election did.
Before we leave, why don't we just all say that please go vote.
Definitely vote.
Thank you all for listening. We'll see you back next year.
Yes.
Please go fucking vote. Mm-hmm. Even if you are a conservative, at least exercise your democratic rights.
Or decline your ballot, which is better than not voting at all.
Do your thing. Make your vote count.
Think about it.
And if you're listening to this on the 4th of June, and this helped you decide, share this with someone you love.
Yeah.
Love.
All right, so you can find us at
Undecided Podcast on Instagram, at Undecided_pod on Twitter. We're here in our living room, at my house, with the twinkly lights, and we're going to eat some pasta and get some white.
Thank you guys so much. Yeah! Declining my ballot, which is a I wouldn't do it if I lived in a riding that I thought would not go either Liberal or NDP. But I live in Toronto Centre. There's the chances of it going to Conservative are very, very slim. I am declining my ballot because I am, because first of all, not that many people decline their ballot. To decline your ballot doesn't mean I spoil my ballot, and it doesn't mean that I'm not voting. It's a formal, I don't want to say vote, because it's the rejection of a vote, but it's formal, me formally saying I'm not going to vote, or I don't believe in any of the candidates.
Making a statement.
The last provincial election, around 29,000 Ontario people voted, or declined their ballot, and, there's a few reasons for me doing this, the first of which is that I don't agree with the election system. I want a proportional representation system. Sorry. Had a little sangria.
That's what this podcast is all about.
And the other reason is I think my vote will mean more as a... from me declining my ballot versus me, my other choice would be to vote NDP. And I think me declining my ballot as a young person makes a larger statement. I think a lot of what all the political parties say, whether it's NDP, Liberal, PCs, is a lot of talk and not a lot of actual doing, or it's very difficult to get things done. And I find it really, really frustrating.
I find politics really, really frustrating. But I don't want to not have a vote, and I don't want to not have a say.
Wow.
And I want to say to all young people who are like, my vote doesn't count or whatever, instead of just not going to the polls or instead of just not voting, if you decline your ballot and you say, none of these people represent me, none of these people really, truly say what I want to say, you're going to have more of a say than them politicians thinking you just don't care. Because I don't think most people don't care.
I work in a research center, which is, like, looking for renewable energy solutions to, like, all the demand on the grid and, like, the downtown core, which is a lot. And climate change, like, isn't something that we have time to act on. And I think that's the scariest part of a lot of conservative, like, the Republicans in the States or, like, the PCs here, like, they think that we just have time to, like, dick around for another 10 years and be like, you know, like, it's not happening. Mm-hmm. And, like, environmental racism is, like, totally a thing, and it's gonna hit minorities first. And
or it already is. It already
it is. Oh, totally. Yeah. But like, you know, when shit really starts to hit the fan a couple years down the road, it's gonna hit minorities first and poor people. And I think for a lot of PC voters, they're just like, we can buy our way out. Like, you know, we can buy the house at the top of the hill.
We'll just move tomorrow.
Yeah. And like, the tsunami's not gonna hit me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And so, I mean, it's just something that we have no time to act on, and so Doug Ford's proposals are really frightening.
I think, as someone just, you know, trying to find somewhere that rent is going to stay reasonable, it's so important. Just because, like, I've been living at Midtown for about 6-7 years now, and we have rent control just by our landlords alone, and it has been such a lifesaver, only because now, 7 years into condos going up and, you know, gentrification swiping into our area, I'm still sitting at a price point that is manageable for me, whereas people are moving into the same building with rent that's $400 more than I'm paying. And it's affecting them. It's definitely affecting them. We're seeing more business owners and business types move into the area, which obviously, again, drives the price up. And that's happening more and more often in more and more areas in Toronto. It used to just be, you know, King Street and Queen Street.
Now
it's Eglinton, it's Yonge, it's, you know, it's everywhere. It's the whole lakeshore. So it's definitely super important that this is a focus.
It's sad for me because it just shows me that, like, these people who you think are, like, in this, like, super vibey neighborhood, like, want to, like, change the world. They actually don't.
No.
And they're, like, so set in their ways, and they're not ready to let more people in. I think it's heartbreaking to feel the fact that someone is just so concerned about having other cultures and life and development in their own area. I'm like, it's not yours. Like, this is a developing world. We're in Canada. Share the space. Learn from each other. Like, the fact that you're so self-absorbed in the way that your garden party looks. It's like, oh, let's invite all these people to live with us. Like, I'm so about Syrian refugees, anyone, poor people, but, like, not in my neighborhood.
Not really with us.
A huge step backwards if we eliminate this cap and trade system. I was learning in my classes that politicians think in 5 to 10 year chunks, obviously, because that's how long they'll likely be in office. And that's just not, it's not working. You can't be thinking only 10 years in the future.
So I have for a long time been on a drug called fluoxetine, which is an antidepressant. And so that's covered, it's all great. But because of that, there's a certain type of birth control that I have to be on so that it doesn't interact with that. And since that kind is a little bit unusual, it's not covered. Like 2 weeks ago, I accidentally went in too early, and they were like, and I just gotten confused. I thought I didn't have an extra pack at home, but I fully did. So I went in too early by accident, and they were like, well, you're too early, we can't cover you, so if you want this now, you have to pay $75.